Production. Recorded live.
Hi, my name is Will Morgan from A Few Shots of Shaman. And of course, again, I'm here with Douglas Boyles from The Mask of God. You're listening to 42 Minutes, and today we have somebody who joined us named Alan Abadesa, the editor to The Sync Book and also blogger for A Mask of God with Douglas. How you doing there, Alan?
Oh, doing fantastic. Thank you. Take you off loudspeaker so you can probably hear me better. How are you doing today, Will? Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's been a while, man. I always enjoy talking to you.
Same but, here.
Well, let's see. What we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks and has been the relationship from with schizophrenia and sync. And I know I heard you on the Red Ice conversation talk about how everybody is seeing this from a different way. And I'm kind of wondering, is that the way you see it? Is it sort of like, because, I mean, I just got my sync book now, and I'm reading how multi, like, POVs there are involved here. There's a lot of point of views in different sections of the sync book. Is it a way to move between point of views with sync, and is that related to schizophrenia?
I think we would interpret it sort of as schizophrenia if we're to try and understand all of those points of view. You know, during the Red Ice thing, I gave the example of the constellations viewed from different planets. Perhaps a better example would have been a hologram, right? The idea that if you split a hologram, it still maintains all of the information. The whole information is maintained in the smaller piece, but the image itself actually shifts point of view. It shifts perspective. So if I cut out a piece of a hologram, I'm going to see perspective looking at it from the right side, whereas the other piece might see it from the left side. So it might look like two different images, but still maintains the same information. And I think with all of the different speculation about a holographic universe, that actually makes the most sense. We're all looking at a piece of the puzzle, and I think particularly with sync, when a lot of us follow a particular pattern and are showing how things interrelate, well, we're coming up with this pattern that shows all this massive connection, but from our perspective and seeing that particular piece of the puzzle. And I think, Crystal Kanar, who's also in the Sync book and who also writes Mask of God and has her own blog, Constellation Contemplation, she had, early on when we did the Mask of God blog, she wrote this wonderful thing about, which would have basically come across as schizophrenia, was about how the Mask of God was how this God force would basically need to become all these different individuals, you and me and Doug and everybody, in order to fully experience its own creation, that it would need all these unique experiences that only an individual could have in order to experience every facet from every possible perspective. And that would be a schizophrenic God, but not as a necessarily a negative thing. Maybe it's about realizing that this is on purpose. I don't know. It's this sort of
control schizophrenic. Last week Will said, but sync is controlled schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
Which at the time I just totally smirked about, because what does that mean? But then it makes perfect sense, you know? So how do you experience basically everything? Well, you have a crack-up and you send out your own little God units? I don't know.
So reality is just God becoming schizophrenic, like splitting his personalities apart? See, I think that's interesting because, like, say, Jim Carrey, okay, who, you know, you can look at it two different ways. The guy's being stereotyped because he can play multiple characters in a role, but he also plays a lot of God characters. Like, He has very, very high resonance with Dionysus, Jesus Christ, Osiris, which are all of these, like, you know, main deities. But they're also a symbol of, like, God within man. Do you know what I mean? So the schizophrenia overlay, as far as like eternal sunshine for the spotless mind, and me, myself, and Irene, and that one where he gets hit on the head and thinks he's somebody different, Philip K. Morris, and there's also a lot of mistaken identities involved with this. It's kind of symbolic of how the God is just split into point of views through reality. But I don't know. I take exception. You know, it's interesting how this has to do with conspiracy theory, and individuals like Richard Shaver. Do you guys know who Richard Shaver is, by the way? Am I speaking out of place here?
I don't know. I think I know who he is.
Okay, Richard Shaver was an individual who wrote into Amazing Stories back in 46, 47, and he wrote. He said it was true. It was presented to be true. Now, originally, he wrote a piece into Amazing Stories. The main editor being the famous Ray Palmer there at the time received a letter from Richard Palmer saying that he had discovered a secret in the alphabet. He said that he discovered that certain words had certain meanings based on ancient manipulation of the alphabet. Does that sound familiar to you guys?
Sure, I've heard a lot of theories like that.
Right, exactly. And so the theory made sense to Ray Palmer, so he asked Richard Shaver to send him some more. Richard Shaver sent him a whole story just about, presented as true and not fiction, about these underground robots that were sending out these rays that were manipulating people's thoughts and minds. He said that they were flying around in UFOs, and this became the UFO craze in the 40s. Shortly after Shaver was Kenneth Arnold, then Maury Island, and then the Roswell incident, and then everybody was seeing UFOs everywhere and writing in to Ray Palmer at Amazing Stories saying that they had seen these UFOs, that they had evidence of the Devos, which were the little robots that were manipulating everybody's things. But Richard Shaver was crazy. Like, he was instituted with schizophrenia. He was hearing voices. He was, you know, imagining things. And his stories were basically fiction. So, this happens again with David Icke. If you go back and you listen to David Icke, he has very similar things that Richard Shaver says as far as, you know, all of a sudden, I think, he started hearing the voices of his coworkers and stuff, and then his depiction of these evil things controlling everything, what a normal conspiracy theory would call the Illuminati or whatever, match what Shaver said these Devos were, this evil race that was conspiratorially controlling everything. But both of these gentlemen have schizophrenic points of view. They're not really seeing something that's not there. We know that there's good evidence that something is crooked around in those areas, but they've turned it into some crazy thing. And now Bill Cooper, I was just reading Bill Cooper, and I'm about to finish this up. I didn't mean to take too long with this guy. But Bill Cooper's first paragraph or first couple of paragraphs of his books is saying that he experienced a large amount of synchronicity that proved to him that God, he was on God's side, like God was taking care of him and putting him in a place. Why does he associate this with God? Why is sync associated with God? Why?
Okay, here we go. This past week I read a sync book piece because last week we talked about Goro. And in that discussion, we each had our perception of who those two individuals are and why they differed. And then as I was reading the piece, I realized that they really don't differ that much, that Jake's sync book piece and Goro's sync book piece are really quite similar. They're more similar than they are dissimilar. In fact, they even reach one conclusion together, about time travel, that sync is time travel, and that when you bump into something that is nearly absolute truth, it resonates universally. You know, so they both came to the same idea that if you can get the nearer to truth you can get, the more guidance or light it will shed on your own journey. And I want to come back to the idea of journey in a second, but speaking to your point, Will, I wanted to read just a blurb from Jake's piece on 251, the sensation that things are specifically being orchestrated for or even by yourself is a normal result of the emerging sync consciousness. Depending on the temperament and makeup of the specific belief system, the interpretation of sync can be nefarious or benign. If concepts of influence over what happens in space-time are associated to pyramid-type hierarchies, the syncs form a reality of peculiar control networks, manipulating the texture of the moment. To satisfy the ever-increasing depth of the experience, the limited self, ego, needs increasingly powerful and subtle top-down organizations able to manipulate the environment, sometimes extending them beyond the physical into the spiritual, interdimensional, and godlike spheres. And then he says, if the external control concepts are replaced by the personal and internal, the individual experiencing sync can start thinking himself or herself God. So this is kind of like the last little bit really sums up where he says, the faulty idea that the universe is a hierarchy of power and influence introduced at a young age is responsible for these phantom menaces. And so this is pretty interesting to me because in a nutshell it sums up a lot of what goes on with our relationship to God, whether as children we experience the world as a hierarchy, and then when we start interacting with the non-local self, we often experience that from a place of fear and experience it in that same hierarchical power structure, which is, you know, the Illuminati trilogy. But what also happens is that if we try to move beyond the fear, we can take on the notion that we are the non-local self and then become, it's the same schizophrenic crackup where, this happened to me last year, where if you're God, are you God then? Are you responsible for everything? But I think, and so hopefully, let's talk about how everyone in our community has their own perception of God. And we talk about like it's a, you know, we all know what we're talking about, but then at the same time, I think this is oftentimes where our disagreements come from in as far as this community where we all speak the same language, but we don't have the same goal or, so back to journey. So,
okay, hold on, calm down.
Sorry, I'm going a million miles an hour.
Yeah. No, but that was great.
Go ahead, Alan.
Sorry, I thought that both of you, I thought that was, those are both wonderful. And I just want to throw in a quick little thing here. When Crystal first mentioned the mask of God concept, the sort of schizophrenic God concept to me, it was the first time I really pondered that. It was very powerful for me. And I just so happened to sync with it. Like a few weeks later, I found this book in my wife's old book collection from when she was younger, and it sort of really spoke to me. It was called Interstellar Pig by this guy, William Sleater. It's a kid's book, but I highly recommend it. It's not like really that good a book, but the concept is incredible once you hit the end. It's basically they're playing this sort of role-playing game, which, you know, we could take this to the holographic. I'm sure you guys have heard of different ideas of, like, game theory. We're living in some sort of simulated game. You could take that a number of different ways, to Philip K. Dick, to whoever, right? There's a whole branch of alternative research into this. But it ends, so there's this thing where they're all trying to obtain this one card. It's called the piggy, and this is like the result of the game. You have to be the one holding the piggy when the game ends, and this one human kid ends up in part of the game, and he, as he holds the piggy, it starts to talk to him. But it's this strange little snippets of information, and he has to try and decode what it's saying to him. And what happens is he starts to think, he realizes that it's actually a bomb. And when whoever's holding it at the end of the game, it's going to blow up their entire planet. So the idea is that you want to own it, and then you don't want to own it. And just before he gives it away, he realizes that the piggy devised this game. It's this super intelligent being that devised this game so that it could be passed around, that everyone would want it, and so this way it could merge with and understand the host of that particular planet. But then it had to devise some sort of fear construct so that you would want to relinquish it, so that this way, the only way it could ever fully integrate with every species was to have you want it, and then later to have you fear it so you would be willing to give it up. It says, "The idea that the piggy was a recording device made more sense than anything I had come with yet. It needed the game because its function was to learn about the players and to record what it learned. The piggy was programmed to learn. To do so, it had to provide some reason for the subjects of its study to want it around. Otherwise, it would be neglected, empty, learning nothing. And what better reason for wanting it there was there than fear? Fear of being destroyed and the resulting need for safety, for protection. The game threatened to destroy the creatures, and the piggy promised safety. And that was why all the creatures wanted it and fought over it and gave it the exciting contact with them that it craved. But did the danger have to be real, I wondered."
So you never find out if the piggy really blows up or if he just keeps getting passed on till eternity?
Oh, if you want me to ruin the end of the book, yeah. He finds out that, because they're all talking about, like, the game, and he says, well, what happened at the last game? And they say to him, no, this is still the first game. So you realize that it's always just being passed around. There is no end of the game. It just wants to always be passed around.
Exactly.
Wow.
There is no end. There's no end of the world. It just needs to instill that fear mode so that you relinquish it and let it go, and then it can move on to someone else. I just thought it was so fucking profound.
I just think I think the ability to see that that what you see as yourself as being special, that little thing that you identify with as being the originator of the universe, is in everyone. And so, often called Satori, where I think that the poem goes, I saw faces coming towards me, but all were the same face. All were my face. I wasn't the center of the cosmos. I was the cosmos itself. And what that means is that you realize that your sensory organ of reality, that you are, but is reality God? What do you guys think of that concept as reality is God?
Since Doug didn't answer, I'll tell you. I often use the terms interchangeably just because I was never really comfortable with the term God. I think it's so incredibly loaded. And then when I started to me, it's like if we take God as the sum, the complete total of everything and reality, the universe, all of that, and you just want to take that as the sum, the total, that's
so
the only sort of expression of God
that
I've been comfortable with. So
how do we define God? How do we do that? So I'm thinking maybe the infinite transcendent, source of life, maybe? Is that the notion of God?
Look, I think the reason why, okay, beliefs are what calls the dangerous thing is the external belief of God, right? I mean, I think that your depiction of God, like you said, determines on how you see sync too, and what you think sync means. That's what the whole thing about.
Oh, here's the fundamental question.
Go ahead.
And this is where a lot of people
disagree unknowingly. Do you see God as a personal God, where there's a finely articulated plan, and that the sink is this road or the benchmark on the plan, or do you have a relationship with a non-personal God? It's just the source of life.
Why does it have to be either or? I mean, if it's the source of all life, you originate from it, and thus you're a part of it. So it is something that you have a spark of the divine within yourself, but it is also more than you. I don't understand why it has to be either or. Why isn't it that you are a part of that everything, and that is something sacred and divine, and yet there is something larger than yourself?
Right, the ability to understand things from a different point of view. And that's where the LSD and the esogen means God within, correct? And a lot of people experience godlike religious experiences or conversations with God through LSD. Even Hoffman said pretty much it the same way from that documentary you sent me earlier. And see, it's almost like a speeding up of, it's almost like we can mass produce experiences with God with LSD now. And how that, you know, I thought it was interesting how the doctor said that helped him relate to the schizophrenic individuals that were under their care by taking LSD, because it would rip you out of your personal little reality tunnel or your belief system and drop you into another one so you could relate through someone who had devised reality based off other symbols. See, it's interesting because, you know, you have Korbinsky, or however you say his name, the guy who made General Semantics, saying that reality was based off of language, or language controlled our reality. And in the Bible, it said that in the beginning, God was the Word, and the Word was God.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take LSD or something like that, you're dropped out of the ability to define your reality anymore. It's like you're under a whole new set of rules. And then when you're dropped back in, or when LSD wears off, you're kind of reborn into the world again with a whole new perspective on how the rules could have changed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but, you know, so the documentary you mentioned is called Hoffman's Potion. I had put it on the SyncBook Facebook page. I highly recommend it. It does deal with a lot of how they were able to treat or understand schizophrenia. But I want to take it a step further. The documentary deals a lot with a Canadian research team that dealt with schizophrenia, but there's the famous Harvard team, Timothy Leary, Richard Alpert, and Ralph Metzner. And their sort of thing was that after the psychedelic experience, when they have a book, The Psychedelic Experience, based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which is basically LSD is an induced death experience. It's an ego death, and that's where you can learn and sort of make contact, a pure contact with all these things. But their thing was that for the return session, they put an idea out there that I thought was interesting, was you return and you choose a sort of personality to re-enter into. So as you come back into egoic existence, you of course need an ego, but you can choose and sort of reassemble a working operating system, if you will. But the idea seems to imply that you could essentially break it down, rebuild it, break it down, rebuild it, so that you could have a different experience and a different egoic return each time, a sort of different, if you will, personality. And I know this I know Doug's always afraid of advocating schizophrenia or madness, and I know it's a very fine line here, but if we can just sort of take that for the moment
just the notion of sync is advocating a non-traditional causal reality or experience of reality where
it's redefining your reality based on the symbols that you're seeing without the help of ethogen. So it's
right.
like, I don't know, it's like Buddha got to that that point through meditation or whatever. And then at a certain point in human history, we were able to encapsulate that Buddha-like experience inside of LSD-25. And now think, because we're on down the timeline a little bit, we're learning how to manipulate our reality on a day-to-day basis just by rearranging the words that we see or mashing together different strips of media that we're experiencing during the day.
Right. Now, can I ask you, though, is there really a difference? A lot of us came through a conspiracy understanding, so it's like you learned how to perceive the symbols from that point of view, and then later we saw it maybe as a religious understanding or a culture understanding, a movie. Oh, look, now I can see how these movies go together. Isn't it that same sort of thing of we're trying on different perceptions as we go? And I don't know, maybe we all feel like we're moving towards a higher and higher truth.
That's what I want to talk about is, so this relationship to the God, is there some goal of said God? Like, is evolution purposeful, or is evolution just evolution? And so we want to think that we're climbing higher, but who knows?
Right,
so
would you
define God's purpose then?
And then so, but individuation. So this is the point. A mystic is fairly purposeless. Their relationship to God is total surrender. So they are in the wonder of reality, experiencing everything simultaneously. That's a mystic. And you can see it in Jay Katza and his behavior and his work, where he's really okay with just about everything. But now an alchemist is almost like the exact opposite, where it's almost like the game is you have to find your way out of the maze to God. That it's a really active role instead of passive. And the only thing that I can say to Alan's, why does it have to be both ways, is that I think sync is like passively being active or actively being passive, that we're combining both elements, that there is purpose in our activity while at the same time we're trying to reach this purposelessness, you know, where we just are. It's pure being. And I would say that, you know, in the Illuminatus trilogy, there's this point where the guy realizes that reality is just pure thought, the thought having a thought about the thought.
Yeah. Can I give you a quick thing, because I don't know how much more time I have. I watched the other day, I watched Rushmore, okay? And the main character is Max Fisher. Can you hear me?
Sure,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The main character is Max Fisher. So here you have the right, the Fisher of Men. He's the Grail Quester, the Fisher King, all this stuff, right?
Right, right.
You have his love interest, the teacher, her name is Rosemary Cross. So here she's the Rosie Cross, right? She could be, so she's the Rosicrucian mystery, or you know, you can take this a number of ways. Then what's his name? Bill Murray is Herbert Bloom. So here, you have this idea, is he, you know, their offspring? I guess my point was, I could break this down so easily into Jason Barrera's sort of alchemical understanding. Here, this is an esoteric mystery play, and you even have Max Fisher becomes the one who writes the hit play. And you can just go on and on with this. And I saw that so clearly that you could have that interpretation and it would be a correct one. But then I also saw that because she was the Rosemary Cross and Bill Murray was Herb Bloom, if you were, say, a Jim Sanders who saw things from a plant consciousness perspective, you could easily show the same connections as this is evidence of a plant consciousness and that a connection to the Godhead through that method. And I guess my point is, do you see how there is no wrong
getting in
answer.
The way of each other, right?
Right. Correct. They don't have to. If we all went to the museum and stared at a painting, we could argue for 3 hours what does it mean. So it's like, to say define God, that will define that painting. There's no wrong answer here, but
no.
I think what comes down to is to understand that that perspective, I can learn to see that perspective, and I can see how the plant consciousness perspective and the alchemical perspective are both valid, and they don't need to necessarily disagree or be mutually exclusive.
Right. Individuation is unique to you, and that's why the schizophrenic God needed you to have your experience, and so you have to go on your path, on your quest. Yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
It's interesting, on that documentary, there was a point where one of the doctors, I think his name is Hoff or something, not Hoffman, but the other guy, he said something about the fact that you could stare at a flower and, you know, get soaked down into the details of its intricacies for hours on LSD. And there's the Buddha flower sermon, where all he did was just aloft a flower and hold it up. And you know, basically that's just a symbol of the contemplation, and how that really relates to the symbol of the soul being a rose.
What is the Christian teaching? Consider the lily.
It's there's that whole the flower sermon. I think both Jesus and the Buddha delivered a flower sermon where they just, maybe I'm mixing stuff up, but they just held up a flower, and one of the guys snickered, and he was the only guy that got it in the bunch, and everyone else was like, what?
Right, but that's the whole contemplation. I mean, like the understanding of the soul within a flower. Or, you know, like the king, if you wanted to. You guys hear me?
Yeah, we
can
absolutely
hear you.
Yeah, just sort of contemplating what you said.
So that's
interesting. That deals with plant consciousness and what Jim Sanders wrote in the Think book as well. Jim Sanders is really simple and it's really straightforward, but it really shows the relationship between psychedelic drugs and Think. And basically, that's what Think is being able to look at whatever you're viewing through another point of view. Attach non-obvious meaning. You know what I mean? It's kind of a way to manipulate the psychedelic mind frame while you're not on psychedelics.
Yeah, and it's funny, for a lot of this, like, those who have experienced psychedelics, like I had a conversation with Andras Jones from the Sync book. We both thought that Sync, and Will, you said it yourself, Sync was a psychedelic perspective without the psychedelics. It's like taking that perspective into your everyday life.
And this I would totally agree with. And that, so psychedelics have tremendous value, but they also can do tremendous harm to the finite creature, you know,
yeah,
that we are. The container, the God container, will get burned out on psychedelics, and then you won't be able to, I don't know. So that's that strangeness between purpose. You know, are we supposed to become pure heaven, which is kind of like the psychedelic trip, or are we supposed to bring that heaven down into our God container and try and experience our material experience more fully? And
you got about 3 minutes, Alan.
Okay. All right. I'll throw you one last thing. After speaking to Andras when we went and we all met up at the Sync cabin, something that came up a number of times was I Heart Huckabees. So I hadn't seen it in a few years, but I remembered really enjoying it, and I had to check out I Heart Huckabees. So I just watched it the other night, and I think, I mean, aside from just being such a fun and thought-provoking movie, what I really enjoy is the end where he says, you know, you have the Dustin Hoffman, Lily Tomlin sort of point of view, and then you have their sort of anti-point of view, the negative, nihilistic, you know, pain point of view. And at the end, what is Jason Schwartzman, going from Rushmore to I Heart Huckabees, what does he have to sort of learn? He says, you know, she's too dark and you're not dark enough. So at the end, he makes a synthesis of the two seemingly opposed ideologies. And I think with all of this, we're seeing the different perspectives, And I think what all of us are trying to do is sort of find a synthesis where we take the best of all of them and find a way to integrate them as much as possible.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your show. I'll listen in, but I gotta get the phone's gotta go with my wife. So, you guys have a wonderful day. I'll talk to you guys real soon. Okay.
Yes, sir. It's a pleasure as always. Is there any information you'd like to give out before you head out?
Oh God. No. You know, check out. Of course, buy the Sync book. It's fantastic. Check out my blog, my website, allthehappycreatures.com, and you know, just check us out.
All right. Thanks, Alan. A pleasure as always, my friend.
Peace, brothers. Thanks, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Let me tell you a quick story, just really fast. So he mentioned this meetup. What happened was in August, he flew to Seattle for a wedding. And since I'm relatively close, you know, Jason Elowith and I drove and met him, and then we proofed the Sync book at this cabin for about 3 days. Andras was there, and Justin Gray Morgan, the illustrator, was there. And so we were just looking at the Sync book and mostly just kind of BS and, you know, having a good time. But it was funny because so Jason and I got up really early and we drove to Portland to meet Alan at Steve Wilner's house. And then Jason partook in the Portland devil grass. And then we all got in this car and started driving to Seattle to pick up Crystal, who Alan was talking about. But Jason was like super high. And then Alan and I got into this huge argument about the nature of nature. But it was like the worst traffic jam I had ever seen. And it went from the Oregon border all the way to Seattle. And so I am like in the stop and go traffic, but I'm leaning back yelling at Alan saying, no, no, beaver nature, you don't understand. They only build a sustainable dam, whereas humans build this dam that puts them out of sync with the, you know, the laws of nature. And we'd look over it and Jason would say, I'm not here. I'm not here.
That's funny.
Yeah.
While we were talking just then with him, Terrence McKitta quotes on Twitter put up, psychedelics is like Buddhism with turbocharge.
Yeah.
A quote from Terrence McKitta. That's fine. I mean, I'm kind of envious of your guys' little get-together, and I think it's pretty important to start planning or at least start talking about some kind of Sync conference where as many individuals are involved as possible.
I would completely concur with you. It seems like this has been the thrust of my work from the start, is trying to get as many of us with this same perspective in the room together, because we speak the same language, and when it happens, you feel it. I traveled to Winnipeg. I don't remember what year it was. It must have been 2010, the year we made contact, of course. And there I hung out with Jake and Jim and Kevin, and it was 3 days of incredible, you know, just sublime, a mystical experience. And I had the same experience this past summer in Seattle. And so the next conference, it's happening. It's going to happen this in 2012, the Thinking of Atlantis. We'll see who knows where. I don't know where. I thought it was Atlanta, Georgia for a while.
Well, it's interesting that you were mentioning journey. You were mentioning the word journey, Ernie, earlier in this little presentation of ours. And there's a new movie coming out with The Rock called Journey to the Mysterious Island, where they make a point out of calling it Atlantis. So there's definitely a relationship to Atlantis in this upcoming year of 2012 being kicked off pretty much with a with an Atlantean movie, actually. We'll probably see some other stuff come through, I'm sure, within the upcoming months. I think that there's a progression in the movies that come out throughout a year of that we saw it with 2010, we saw it with 2011, and it seems to be getting more pronounced. since it's 2012, I have every confidence that there's going to be a real obvious theme throughout the year as far as cinema goes.
Yeah. I lost my thought. Oh, I was going to say, we have about 3 minutes left of our 42 minutes. And so, but yeah, I definitely agree that I bet you 2012 is going to be all about Atlantis. And the point that I was making, so I've been reading Hearts in Atlantis by Stephen King, and that book is all about Atlantis sinking, that they understood the new consciousness, but they didn't have enough momentum to bring that into reality. So, you know, there were people out there that had a new perspective on the world, and they wanted to create a new world, but there just wasn't enough momentum or enough people who joined in to change reality. And I think, you know, so he said Atlantis sunk, S-U-N-K. I'm thinking that the sinking of Atlantis, S-Y-N-C, is something altogether different, and that'll happen, or that is happening.
Interesting.
Or crazy.
Or, well, schizophrenic.
Right, and let's not be afraid of it. You know, how would you...
Well, see, I think that's the difficult problem. I don't think schizophrenia can be defined.
Right.
See, that people say, like, oh, that guy's crazy or that guy's schizophrenic, like it's a category that they fit in, when actually I think there's more proof that it's just probably a chemically changed perception. So there's no definition. I don't think one schizophrenic... See, this is interesting how this relates to Philip K. Dick as well. How much time we got left?
You got just a little bit, so wrap it up.
Okay, well, I mean, Philip K. Dick was most of his stories deal with seeing things between schizophrenic and controlled by God, and how those two different points of views are. And I guess that's food for thought for next week.
Food for thought. That's it. So it was fun. I love this. So take care, Will.
Always is.